Okay, the first question, is this true? I was told that Buddha and his followers were not vegetarian. They had to ask for food on alms round and therefore had to eat anything that was given. Some gave meat and non-vegetarian food into their bowls. You're right. Even in Burma and in Thailand today, before noon, when the monks, when the Sangha members go out on alms round collecting food, or in, literally speaking, begging food from laymen, they put food into their bowl. Some of the food may contain meat. But nowadays, many of these devotees, they know that they should put more vegetarian food than meat into their bowl. But in the ancient days, whatever food is given, they eat it. Whatever food is given, when they go back, they collect all the food together and they divide it out to all the Sangha members. They don't differentiate on what kind of food. As long as it's clean and soft and cooked, then they can eat it. So they don't differentiate. So they are not vegetarian in the pure sense of vegetarianism. But of course, they never commit the act of killing. They just accept whatever is given to them. That is a culture or a custom in the ancient days, in the Buddhist time, and that has been passed down even to now. That does not mean that they addict to food, or they like, they addict to meat. They eat anything that was given. But when Buddhism spread to China, the Mahayana Buddhism, they call it, the Chinese modified a bit on this practice. All monks must be vegetarian. They cannot eat meat, because in the Hinayana Buddhism, they have, for example, monks have 250 precepts and nuns have 248 precepts. And on top, they don't take the Bodhisattva precepts. But in China, an ordained monk or nun, other than the Vinaya, the four division Vinaya in China, they also have the Bodhisattva precepts added to it. And a Bodhisattva, according to the Bodhisattva Sutra, a Bodhisattva must stay away from eating meat, must not eat the meat of sentient beings out of compassion, out of mercifulness. So Chinese Sangha members, they don't eat meat, so they just stay vegetarian. Okay? But that shouldn't stop us from questioning the Buddhist philosophy. It's just the practices like that. Maybe in those days, there are so many circumstances that make their practice practicable. Maybe there's not enough food around, or maybe the food, vegetables, are expensive. Or vegetables are not easy to grow, or meat is the common food. If the layman did not understand Buddhism, you have to start telling them not to eat meat, then in the first alms round, they may not have any food, because the food that they can give is just meat. So if you stay away from meat, you don't eat meat, you may not have any food. Because maybe the layman, devotees, they don't eat too many vegetables. So in order to maintain your health, they follow the practice of eating whatever is given. Whatever is given to them, they don't waste. They eat it. They have to eat it. So that brings us up in here. In the temple's vegetarian, in the temple's cafeteria, there are certain rules, especially there are people here who come for the first time. There are certain rules that you should follow. The first rule is you must not waste any food in here. And in other words, if there is food that you cannot eat or you don't eat, you pass. Don't allow people, the servers, to put food in your bowl, then you dessert it later. You don't eat it later because it is not good to waste food. There's so many people who starve to death, and it's very wasteful just to waste your food and not eating it. So for now, it's okay because for first-time comers, they may not know. But next time when you come, you must not leave any food on your plate. You do not waste any food. You must eat every grain of it. You have to follow that rule. The temple maintained the right of refusing you to enjoy the food again if you do not follow the regulations of not wasting any food. You should not waste any food, not only at the temple, at home, anywhere. I have seen people in restaurants that they order a lot of food and then they only eat about one half or one third, and then they waste away all of it. I mean, imagine, temporally speaking, talking about a world, there's so many people who suffer from starvation, and you are wasting valuable food, and it's not right, okay? Not just for Buddhism. For any rational, moral people, you don't waste any food, all right? So that's rule number one. Rule number two, when you're eating in a temple, you have to eat with both hands. One with chopsticks and the other with bowl in your hand, and you do it like, don't eat with just one hand and then move your body eating the food like that. Don't just eat with one hand. You have to eat with both hands. If you eat with just one hand, you don't even follow the Chinese tradition, not just the Buddhist. The Chinese tradition said the eating posture is very important. If you just use one hand and grab up your food and then adjust your body like that all the time, I'm looking from you Cylon and I can see your body moving all the time. You're not stationary. You're moving around all the time. And that's not good table manners, you know. And imagine if you're going, now if you're a teenager, if you're going out with your friends, with your client in the future, dining at a table, if you're always moving your body around, how can your client give you the business? I mean, you must watch your table manners, so you have to use with both hands. Now, also, when you're eating, even if you use both hands, don't lean against the table like that. Some people like to lean half of the body on the table and eat like that. I don't know that shows laziness or it shows you are disinterested in what you're eating. If you're leaning against the table like that, with your shoulders protruded out above your ears, how do you look like when I'm watching from you from the side? You know why I'm here? I'm watching these things. The reason why my table is put in here is I am watching you and telling you what to do. You think this table is set without a reason? So when I see all these funny gestures, I start laughing. Some people moving around like that, some people leaning against that. And I can't imagine how you can lean against a table with your lung clinging to the edge of the table and eat comfortably. So please, at home, anywhere, don't lean both hands on the table and eat. So you have to, your body has to be relatively straight. And that's, of course, rule number two. Now, rule number three, you must keep silent. We don't want people to talk when you're eating. And this is a tradition that many, many cultures don't observe. I'm not saying those cultures are wrong, but I'm saying what a Buddhist point of view about eating. You think eating is so easy a job to perform? When you come to think of it, eating is a very serious, a very respectful, a very important thing to do every day. Now, if you're not eating properly, how can you function properly. So If you're eating and talking at the same time, the temple does not allow that. When you're eating, you must keep silent. There's a Chinese saying, when you're eating, you don't talk. When you're sleeping, you don't talk. Have you seen anybody talking while sleeping? So you don't talk when you're sleeping. You don't talk when you're eating. I can imagine you go crazy if you're sleeping and you start to talk. That is called sleep talking. And I hope you won't develop into sleepwalking. It'll be funny if you develop into sleepwalking. Okay? So don't speak. And another thing, if you're eating in a round table with all the dishes of food on top, and you, if you start splashing your saliva into the food, I'm going to stay away from you. When you're talking all the time, and some people talk, can you see all these germs coming out from your mouth? That's why we have to H1N1. So you really have to observe it. You make sure that you don't spread your germs around. So how can you be eating at the same time? So especially when the Chinese are eating in a round table, when all the dishes are in front of you, you grab your food, you can't just speak and splash your saliva into the food. I think that Western culture is a little better. They pass around. But make sure when you pass the dish around, you don't start to stop. Oh, I like this. And you pass the dish around and your saliva is on top. So you watch that. You don't talk when you're eating. Okay? So you don't talk. Now that's rule number three. Now, rule number four, you don't leave in the middle of a meal. If you really have to go to the John's to ask for a relaxation or whatever you want to call it, and you have to be excused. It's just like in Western table manners, you have to be excused. But please, don't say too many excuses. If every time that person over there in that corner is always asking for that excuse, we know what's going to happen. He's going to be disqualified for coming to the temple to eat again. Okay, so this is just on top of this question. This is about eating. When you come to the temple, you have to eat like that. Okay, so that answered the first question. The second question, if you are trying to explain Buddhism to someone, if he is reluctant, what should you do? Persist or stop? That happens to me too. If you're trying to, you have a very kind heart, you're very compassionate, you really want your friend to know about Buddhism so that they too can be benefited by Buddhism. You wish good, you have very wishful thinking for them. But if you talk to them with the idea of conversion, it's not the right time. You don't think about, I'm going to convert you so that you'll believe in what I believe. Now, that's not, you're doing it too abruptly and too immaturely. Well, what you do is, it's just like in sales, in marketing, in promotion. Don't do hot sales. You will get resistance from hot sales. So what you do is you fish it out first. You talk about Buddhism, and you talk it out as if Buddhism is not an orthodox, highly philosophical religion. You talk about Buddhism in relation to ordinary life, about school, about work, about life, about family, about job, about relaxation. Now, if you start to talk about meditation and say meditation can give you comfort in your alaya consciousness, what is alaya consciousness? If you start to talk about meditation can relax your mind and make you sleep better, oh, I'm interested. So you see the difference? If you are orthodox in what you're talking, if you strongly believe in something and you want to impose it on someone, you're not going to get it. Do not do hot sales. Do persuasive, friendly sales. Do I answer your questions? If you find that person is reluctant, stop. Don't do any more. Come back to him later. If you're the salesman and you find that client is resisting you and you're doing hot sales, stop, talk about other things and come back to him later. You still persist, but you don't persist at that moment. You persist later. A good salesman is always persistent. persistent, not just in one time. I'm going to sell it to you now. You don't accept it. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to persist my second time. My second time is not successful. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to try a third time. That's a good salesman, because you're persistent. You still have to be persistent, but persistent in a comfortable way. Maybe I should join the sales manager of a certain team so that I can tell salesmen to do better. Can Venerable tell us something about the Buddha of Medicine Ceremony? Thank you. The Buddha of Medicine Ceremony. There was a Buddha called the Buddha of Medicine. And this Buddha of Medicine made 12 wishes. And all these 12 wishes are geared towards giving compassion and giving auspiciousness and blessings unto people who suffer from sickness. So if you are healthy now, you don't know about tomorrow. Tomorrow you may be unhealthy, or your friend or your family members could be healthy now, but you don't know about tomorrow. And the Buddha medicine is ready there to help. So the sutra says, always link up communication, mind-to-mind communication to the Buddha of medicine, so that there's always blessings on you to be healthy. On you, if you're sick, then you get healed faster. So in the Buddha of Medicine Sutra, the sutra teaches us how to set up that link with the Buddha of Medicine and chant certain sutras and certain mantras. If you continuously chant that, the sutra, and continuously chant the mantra and follow the practice in the sutra, you will stay on good health. And you can also get blessings indirectly from the Buddha of Medicine bestowing on your relative members who are sick. You don't wait till the last moment. And some people wait till the sickness occur and then they start to get help everywhere. Well, at that time, your mind is all confused because you are in grief. You are so fearful of death. You're so fearful of the consequence of the sickness. At that time, your mind is not clear. Why don't you prepare for it now? Do preparation for it. And set up that link with the Buddha of Medicine so that in times of urgency, you can get the help. It's just like when you want to set up certain relationship, you always keep in contact with that person by giving him a phone call, say hello to him every now and then. If you want his help, instead of just when you're in urgency, then you start to call and that guy said, "Oh, I don't know you. Well, who are you? I mean, you haven't set up contact with me." So you really have to, temporarily speaking, then you really have to set up the contact. So they set up certain ceremony to help laymen to get in contact with the Buddha of Medicine. This ceremony lays out all the procedures of what you should do, what you should do to link up with the Buddha of Medicine. The Buddha of Medicine, in the Sanskrit language, is Baisaja Guru, Vaidyaraya Prabharaja Tathagataya. You understand what I'm talking about? Namo, you know what it is. Baisaja is medicine. Guru is teacher. Vaidyaraya is crystal. Prabha is light. Raja is king. So all this is the name of the Buddha of Medicine. The Buddha of Medicine is a common English translation, but the actual word is Baisaja Guru Vaidyaraya Prabharaja Tathagataya. But it's not that difficult. I sound difficult, but it's not difficult if you learn. The mantra is not that difficult either. Namo Bhagavate Baisaja Guru Vaidyaraya Prabharajaya Tathagataya Arahate Samya Sambuddhaya Tadiyata Baisaja 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 Sambhukate Swaha. That's the whole mantra. If you chant 108 times every day, you'll be healthy. You'll help people who got sick to be healthy. A ceremony is to help you to lay out the procedures for doing it, for chanting. All right, so I answer that question. And there's a sutra to it. So there's so many things we have to talk about. I'm only talking about the Diamond Sutra. There's so much to learn in Buddhism. I haven't learned 10% of it. I have learned enough to talk about it, but I haven't even learned 10% of it. It's so much, so massive, so immeasurable. It's like the ocean. The teaching of the Buddha is like the ocean. So vast, so boundless. But if you want to taste the ocean, do you have to drink up the whole ocean? You just scoop a cup and taste it. You know what the ocean tastes like. You don't need to drink and swallow the whole ocean. It's impossible to swallow the whole ocean. Just scoop up a cup, taste the water. You know what that water tastes like. 10% is good enough. 1% is maybe sufficient for you. I said I already got 10%, maybe it's less. I don't know. Okay, so that answers the question. I'm not as wise as Zuputi. I hope you are. The guy of the Diamond Sutra, and even thought I have been practicing over a year, I have not been successful with the voice inside of my mind. What do you suggest me to do? I think I'm too obsessive. Well, if you have an obsessive mind and your mind is wandering all the time, you really have to learn meditation. The first thing to do is to meditate and to chant Namo Amitabha or the name of Buddha more. Now that may stop your mind from wandering away. That may stop your obsessiveness. Now, if you are coming here every Saturday, if you really put your mind to learning Buddhism, you're on your way. You're on your way to get away from the obsession to enlightenment. You're on your way to have more understanding. You already have stride out your first step. Remember what Lao Tzu say? A million miles start from the first step. We're looking at a million miles. We're looking at 1,000 miles. But that 1,000 miles starts from the first step. You already have that first step. What are you worrying about? You have that first step and you continue walking. You're not going to have a first step and you already reached your destination. If you just listen to one or two lectures, meditate once or twice, and you think you already got it, you have stride out your first step. And that's the most meaningful step. A million miles starts from the first step, Lao Tzu said, and he said, a huge, gigantic tree starts from a shooting. A small, miniature little plant will start from that seed. That small little seed, it grows into 100-foot, 16-feet diameter trunk of tree, of a cedar, after thousands of years. But it starts from the first shoot. Is it called shoot or seedling? Yeah, a seedling. From that seedling. So you're on your way. Don't hurry. This is what I learned in Canada. Do not hurry. We used to be very hurry and do things, but now we take things at pace. One step at a time. Future, present, and past are words, semantic, and to represent concepts of time. Just because they are not material doesn't mean they don't exist or does exist only after to material things. Well, they're semantics, yes. Past, present and future is of three dimensions of time. And that concept exists. Time exists, present exists, future exists, but they exist on causality. That means a lot of causes put together that, oh, there's time of the past, there's time of the present, there's time of the future. It exists, but it's falsely exist. Illusionary exist. It's just like our body. Can you say I don't have a body? I don't have an ego. I don't have a body. This body actually exists, but it exists based on causality. It has to go one day. It does not have true existence. It exists only temporarily. So we don't cling onto it as a permanent existence. Time exists. Past, present, future exist, but they exist only on causality. And what do I mean by that? We really have to have a lecture on causality to explain that. Here's a question. Here's a question in Chinese. There's a question saying, what does that mean by that board? The first in Chinese, 8 characters in Chinese is 雞公多少兩比來去. This is a board telling us the 5 contemplations while you are eating. The first contemplation contains the first eight Chinese characters. What does that mean by the first 8 Chinese characters? It means take food according to how much merit you have earned and consider whether you really deserve what you're eating. The food is given to you free. Do not accept anything given free to you. Why do you have to accept people? You haven't done anything and you accept just anything free. You have to repay it in your next life. I mean, don't just accept anything as free and you just take it. Somebody gave me something free, I'll take it. No, don't take anything free. There's no free lunches. Have you done what you have done? Have you practiced your meditation? Have you done the right thing to deserve this food? If everybody consider that, if the whole family consider that, it would be a better family. The kids would say, do I deserve to eat dad's food? Have I done my homework? Have I studied hard so that I deserve this food? Have I contributed to the family? I mean, you really have to deserve what is given to you. So the first four Chinese, that's why I always say, don't just accept donation from anybody. Somebody donate this lunch, you just take it. You will have to repay it. You just don't take it. Of course, I'm saying this, you put in your own donation in donation boxes. A lot of people put their own donations in the donation boxes after they eat this lunch, but just don't take anything free. You have to deserve it. You have to deserve what you're eating. Now, how do you deserve it? If you practice meditation, if you promote the Dharma, if you render your help, if you're compassionate, if you're giving back to the society more than what you're eating, you're okay. So consider also, other than whether you deserve it, consider where from and how this meal finally comes to your table. And do not take for granted that it should be offered to you free. How does the food come to your table? The farmers have to grow the rice, have to grow the vegetables, someone has to prepare it, someone has to make money to buy it, fire, water, everything, a lot of costs is put together to make that food come true. You consider how difficult it has been for the food to come to your table. Don't just take it for granted that the food, you deserve it. No, it's dangerous that way. So what I'm saying is, today I'm not gonna linger on, which I used to be. I'm gonna just finish the first contemplation. There's still 4 more contemplations that I will leave it to the next time. But suffice it to say that don't just take anything for granted. You really have to deserve it. Don't just take any generosity from anybody. And sometimes on second thought, I think that if we're unemployed because we have contributed UI, sure, we deserve the UI. But if we're on welfare, you really have to think about, do I have to depend on it all the time? And have I contributed society to be deserved of my welfare check? I have heard a lot of people a lot of family members telling me that even the family member has become rich and that family was on welfare, and then a daughter came home with a check and said, Mom, I make a lot of money and here's a check for you for buying a house. And you know that mom said, if I buy a house, how can I qualify myself for a welfare check? Some people think like that. You know, you've pondered about it. I'll leave that to you. Okay.